Welcome back to A Talking Three Guys, your favorite show where two guys normally talk, but now there's a third guy? Or, as you might have known it before, your favorite podcast that answers the one question that you ask about every single movie. Is this better or worse than Vin Diesel's 2005 seminal masterpiece, The Pacifier? That podcast is No Highway Option. And I'm your host, Luke. And I think I would like a beaver to talk to me, but just once.
And I'm your other host, Connor J. Burke. And when it comes to an animal that would talk to me just once, I think I would enjoy talking to a rat, because I would ask him, can he cook?
And we have a guest with us today. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us an animal thing?
I'd love to introduce myself. My name is Mike Vavzinic, and I think that the one animal I would love to talk to me once would be a giant squid. Mostly because I'd love to see how the mechanics of that would work.
Yeah, isn't its mouth, like, on the bottom?
Yeah, so, like, does it have to lift up, like, three or four of its wiggly arms and wave them? Like, is it, like, a Davy Jones-type situation? Like, Pirates of the Caribbean? Or... I don't know.
Do he sound like Squidward also?
I would hope so. I would love that.
How do you feel about having arm where feet should be?
How do you feel about 90% of your body being leg?
I already experienced that on a daily basis, being a 6'3" man with an abnormally short torso and long legs.
Right on. Well, in case you couldn't tell, this week's movie, given to us by last week's guests, plural, of the Well, I Liked It, or sorry, the Well, I Liked It
there you
podcast.
Go.
Whose names were...
Katie and Brad.
Yes. We can make that sound good later. This week's movie was called A Talking Cat.
There's some punctuation in that name.
Ah, I was hitting the exclamation point.
Were you?
There's still two more.
A little subdued exclamation point.
I think it's more like a talking cat.
So I guess that's the first discussion about it, though, is, like, because we start with the exclamation point, does the question mark matter?
Yes. Objectively, yeah. Yes.
Mike, weigh in before I could even say it. I was going to say, you're the English major, weigh in here.
It was the very first thing I thought of, and I won't lie, I was walking around my apartment experimenting with how it would sound, because you do have to get all three punctuation marks in it. Because you need the a talking cat at, like, it needs to have that exclamatory part, question, and then another exclamatory section of it. Very difficult.
So you're a firm believer in all three.
I mean, if they're going to put punctuation in the title of a film, then it's very important.
Yeah, they wouldn't just throw that in there for no reason. Like, everything in this movie, there was a lot of thought behind it.
There was a lot of thought in this high school project.
I think that's giving it a little bit of credit.
Now, I do have a question about the punctuation, and this crossed my mind. Sure. Since this is predominantly a family film, and the core demographic would be younger children, why are we putting punctuation in the title when many of them can't read?
Emphasis. Well, you gotta know that the cat is talking. Also, this director has directed future films, and I don't think they're all in the same universe, but they all have exclamation point, question mark, exclamation point.
I only found one on Amazon Prime. The pony one.
A talking pony!
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
There was also, from a different studio, there was a movie called A Talking Hedgehog. Unless that's also the same studio, but the trailer was different than the others.
probably from Columbia Pictures, or from Paramount Pictures, and that was released in February 2020. It's called Sonic.
Oh, god damn it. How did I know? Anyway, you guys...
What other hedgehog is there?
It's the little hedgehog guy. He talks.
Anyway, thank you, Katie and Brad, for giving us this movie.
Thanks for this experience. You guys want to bust into the beat-by-beat analysis?
Yep.
I would love to.
All right. So our movie kicks off. We are in one of the four or five different shots of this little forest area that we're going to be recycling over and over and over again.
So, yeah, one of the first things on the IMDb trivia is this movie takes place in two locations, but includes 59 different establishing shots.
Many of which are repeated.
Or just flipped backwards. I wish I had a stopwatch to time just how much of the movie was establishing shots, because it was...
A chunk.
I would say it was at least 20 of the 86 minutes.
Yeah, I think it was probably, somewhere, I would say a third of the movie was just panning shots of the same tree and water.
Was it even panning, though? It was very static. A lot of the shots were static.
It was freestockfootage.com type shots.
Did anybody get where this was filmed?
Apparently it was filmed in Malibu, from what I've read. But again, you couldn't get that.
California.
I guessed Florida.
Well, you guessed wrong.
I just thought, yeah, like... Where would someone live where they would be able to get funding to shoot a terrible movie like this in their own home? Probably California.
Yeah.
Someone probably had a connection or three.
Well, you have the shots of, like, that one shot of the mountain range. Okay, I think it only came up once or twice.
The really long driving sequence later.
No,
it's just, I was talking about the mountains, and like... she just keeps driving.
That one's there too, but I meant the one where they're just like standing on top of the mountain and looking out. I think it's part of the like hike, maybe.
I forget, man.
Before the car, I don't know. But that was the first one where, at parts of this, it almost felt like they wanted you to think it was on an island.
They hyped up the beach.
Right.
They have to beach and woods, and like the way they interconnected those establishing shots, I was like, this geography makes no sense.
Oh no, the foliage was different in every single shot. It was very disconcerting as a viewer.
Makes it feel like it's on an Animal Crossing village or something.
But I guess like California is one of the only places that this could kind of sort of work. As far as like, we're reaching for it, but they want us to reach for it, because you have the like mountainy areas, and you also have obviously the beach areas.
Right, but I don't know. But why establish the beaches if we're not going to go to the beach at all?
Because they paid for that stock footage.
I guess so. I mean,
now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, I don't know why we got any shot of the beach at all.
The whole beginning of the film felt to me like a first-time filmmaker who got his very first camera and only had himself there, so he filmed himself walking around his house for 20 minutes, edited it all together, and felt like it was the coolest thing he'd ever put together. That's how it felt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then added grainy cell phone audio of a man talking.
Yeah, his audio, the cat's audio quality is worse than ours.
It's different every time.
Well, and it
consistently bad, but
it was consistently bad. I think they like put more of an echo filter when he's supposed to be thinking as opposed to talking. But it was apparently recorded in Eric Roberts, the man who voices the cat. It was recorded in his living room in 15 minutes. The entire part.
That actually makes a lot of sense.
He sounds more disinterested than Bill Murray in the Garfield movie, which is saying something.
Yeah, so this is 2013, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That answered that question. Because, I don't know, when I'm thinking of a talking animal, this this is not what I'm thinking of. I'm not thinking of, like, sort of a lazy, disinterested, like, a 50-something. And then I was thinking, like, oh, well, Garfield had happened, and at least the first one had had some amount of critical reception.
They were both received terribly.
But at least notoriety, you know?
Notoriety for being...
When you talk about it, people know about that Garfield, and they can hear Bill Murray talking in that voice.
Okay.
You know? So I guess, I don't know. I feel like there has to be some, maybe there isn't any influence at all, but it seemed like they were trying for something there.
Well, and this is 2013, so this is, like, the era of Grumpy Cat.
Also
so
true.
So, given him a voice that, like, is disinterested and not caring, the talking cat, whose name is Duffy, by the way, but did you catch who he was played by? You catch who he was played by?
The guy you said.
No, Squeaky!
No. Yeah, the cat himself, his name's Squeaky.
Special appearance by Squeaky.
Hell yeah. Good job, Squeaky.
Oh, man. He did do a good job. Him and his cartoon mouth.
With those bizarre opening credits.
Yeah. So anyway, yes, we meet Squeaky is wandering through the woods. We're going to find out later. His name is Duffy. And Eric Roberts is giving this monologue about how he likes to help people. And he likes walking through the woods. And
don't forget, there's a bit of foreshadowing I found in that opening monologue, which I thought was quite advanced. Which, let me look at my notes here really quickly. He talks about getting into a nice comfy bed, which is foreshadowing for quite a bit later.
Oh.
And he also walks past a really ugly looking collar on a stump that he does not mention at all.
I didn't even catch that.
Well, that was on the second viewing because I tried to watch it 3 times and I had to stop because I just couldn't get through it the first 2 times.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's dedication.
I was hoping you had watched it through in full 3 times, like back to back.
That's asking a lot, especially with this film.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we get all of that brilliant foreshadowing, and our talking cat wanders into the home of two of our main characters. We meet Phil, who is a vague computer man, who has made a lot of money doing vague computer stuff, and his son, Chris, who is a nervous boy. What do you guys think of the decor in the house?
You mean the half a car or the tree wearing shoes?
Exactly what I meant.
Well, so apparently most of the furniture was furniture the cast and crew donated to save budget.
Shocker.
Which brings up more questions. Who owns half a car couch? But the bigger thing is this home set. It's like a big, fancy house. It's got like a spiral staircase in the middle. I thought it looked like a library for a few shots. Like just a weird styled library. It's the same set used for the 2011 pornographic movie Jules Jordan Presents Ass Worship 13. That's what IMDb trivia says.
It's true. It's true. And a lot of the director's other films, which are semi-erotic, have also been filmed in that house. He just likes to have half-naked men and women all over the place.
Define semi-erotic.
No butt shots. They'll show, like, torso, they'll show legs, but never any of that butt.
It's like okay for TV-ish. Something you discover when you're, like, 14. You're like, this is, I am an adult now.
I don't know why, but for a second I really thought you were going to bust into that song. Like, the way you said this is, I thought you were going, this is a story of a
this
girl.
This is!
And I wouldn't have been relevant.
But speaking of music, you haven't talked about the glorious soundtrack that accompanies...
Yeah, we haven't gotten there.
Oh, boy.
So much of this was, like, Windows Movie Maker. We also didn't talk about, after that initial shot of the, well, a couple of shots of the cat wandering through the woods and hearing the cat's thoughts, we go to this, I don't know, it's definitely like, when you're like 12 or 13 and you're like on, you were on your parents' computer or you were over at someone's house and you were like taking a bunch of pictures with the different filters, like whoever you had, you knew who had like an Apple one and it did all the fancy stuff. You know, that was the filter that they did all of the opening credits in.
It's like an Andy Warhol comic book pop art attempt for a photo filter. And it's just like cat doing cat stuff. And it has the, you know, the talking cat theme in the background, which is like basic MIDI sitcom music.
Very stock.
But there were a couple variations of that song. If your ears are finely attuned to it, you do hear some subtle variations. And the very final time it plays during the end credits, it is fully orchestrated, synth heaven. I loved it.
I would say that the soundtrack was okay. You know, we'll get to that in our criteria. But like,
there's one specific song
right.
on the soundtrack that made me lose my mind.
But yeah, yeah. I feel like I got some guesses. We'll get there later. Anyway, the cat breaks and enters into this home and is just chilling around while we're introduced to like sort of the backdrop of what we're going to be into here. The father is dip doodling around the house and his son is like, "Man, Dad, I think it's very embarrassing. Like, stop." What did he say? Something weird, and he did that dance into the car chair.
Oh, he said something like, "Vroom, vroom, 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 vroom."
Yeah,
just like vroom, vroom, beep, beep. And the son's like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "You used to love when I did that, but now I'm retired because I sold the company."
Yeah, he is.
And I have a weird Smash Mouth ass soul patch going on.
He does.
I didn't like it. That took me out of it.
No, I hated it. He should have shaved it.
It was too close to his skin tone. It looked like a growth. I was so disgusted by it at first.
Like a fascinating, like his head went in three different directions. We were like Trump on top and Hobbit in the middle, and then like Dave Grohl on the bottom. And there it was, like the things did not communicate.
He looked like dime store Rodney Dangerfield. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Rodney Dangerfield, if someone tried to clone him but filled the rest of the DNA with, like, various character actors you don't know the name of.
And a little bit of jelly.
Not enough Margot Martindale.
Sorry, John Whittaker, if you're listening to this.
Yeah, you really, like, you did what you could with this.
You're alive, right?
He is, and I thought he was the best part of the whole film.
He's having fun. He knows what movie he's in.
I think it would be a lot flatter if he was not having fun. Like, in the beginning, his son really seemed kind of wooden for parts. And he didn't really get a whole lot better, but he didn't stay the same amount of, like, "Here I am delivering a line to you right now."
They make the character a little more interesting later.
Right.
But at first he's just like, "Oh no, Franny's coming over and I have to tutor her."
Right. Franny, who is
dad.
A girl who is, these kids are all 17. She needs to bring her English grade up. So she calls Chris on the phone, says that she'd like to be tutored. And Chris forgets how to say words at all.
He flat out tells her, "I'll tutor you, no shirt, no shoes, no service."
Yeah.
And she goes, "What?" And he goes, "Abada."
That's true, that was...
That's
it sets you up for what's coming. And then we quickly shift over to another family entirely, where we have Tina, who is business girl, and what's the brother's name is Trent, whose head
Trent, played by Squished Colin Jost.
Oh.
Colin Jost with like a squished in face a little bit.
I don't know, but his head is taller than Colin Jost's head, I feel like.
He made a few faces, and I was just like,
He made lots of faces.
You should be tricked into saying some almost racist things there.
This was his debut. His first film.
Yeah, yeah, good
they
for him.
They didn't make a point to say that in the credits. Which I feel like this felt like everyone's debut.
Not Eric Roberts.
Right, not this Eric Roberts guy that Connor's going to tell us about later.
He voices the cat. He's got 612 credits on IMDb.
Well, that's why they only got him for 15 minutes in his couch.
Yeah.
Look at this movie. Look at the budget it had.
And he's just a busy man. If he's going to do 600 films, he's booked.
Yeah.
That's the only way they got him to sign on. Tina wants to do business, and her mother, Susan, doesn't think that they have money for her to do business. It's a plot that goes nowhere. You don't need to remember about it. Just remember that she is interested in that stuff, and her brother is going nowhere. Oh, and here comes the cat. The cat is also staying at their house some of the time. Did you guys catch the laser pointer?
I was just about to say that, yeah.
Clearly, they had some trouble getting the cat to go places and do things.
There's a lot of shots where the cat just, like, plops down, and when Squeaky is sitting, you can look around it, and there's just cat treats surrounding him.
Yep.
And they're like, wow, I didn't expect this cat. Nobody's fed this cat. And there's just cat treats all over the floor.
It made me so mad that happened, because they had the budget to make this cat's mouth move, but they didn't have the budget to wipe out those little pieces of food pellets that were almost the same color as the floor in static shots. Like, come on.
Did they have the budget to make the cat's mouth move?
The listed budget on IMDb Pro is $1 million. So, it's something. I've seen things made with less that look better.
Yeah. I mean, most of the budget probably went to, I don't know, renting that house.
Could own the house.
They could own the house. Someone involved could... Someone who was also involved in Ash Smashers 3, or whatever you said, could be a producer on this.
Jules Jordan presents Ass Worship 13.
Yeah, close enough.
Put some respect on that name.
So now we go back over to the mansion. We go back, girl number one. What was this?
Franny, a name Franny. That I have only known to be had by grown men.
Yeah! Only elderly men in my life.
I did wonder what Franny was short for. If it was short for anything, I assumed maybe Francesca.
Francine? Yeah.
But why would we go for Franny as a nickname? It's...
Isn't there a...
Because she's a quirky girl. Did you see her necklace that was also a bow tie?
Oh, I saw it. Yeah. I saw it. And I went out and bought it.
2013, baby.
With a Franny?
Francine. No, Francine from Arthur.
Isn't there another one with a Franny or not?
The Franny. Fran Drescher.
The nanny.
Oh, Mr. Sheffield.
Yeah, her.
Yeah. Played Cinderella's fairy godmother, didn't she? That was Carly Rae Jepsen. Wasn't she the fairy godmother?
Yeah, how's this connecting?
You said Fran Drescher. It doesn't connect.
Okay.
We're in a Fran hole. Back to this movie that we're talking about. It's a talking cat. Fran comes over. She may or may not be able to read at all. There's some discussion about tutoring. There's a little bit of light flirting. Chris is afraid of girls. He runs away to make a list of books.
I do believe Chris is a homosexual.
That's what... my roommate Chris said while we were watching this.
Past guest friend of the show, Chris Benicki. Yes.
There were definitely some shots later in the film that showed some homoerotic interest between the couple of the men in the film.
Right. It's a classic love triangle. Franny likes him, but he likes Trent and Trent's dumb faces.
But I like the setup between him and Franny, because you think that he's afraid of girls, but it's just because, spoiler, he can't swim.
Truly, yeah, he's that... afraid of his own pool.
They just ignore the Franny plotline for a bit to get to that, but that's in a while.
Yeah. First, we have to get through, after this awkward interaction takes place, the cat talks to the other girl before he talks to Phil, right?
Yes. No.
Yes. Because Phil is in the bed when he talks to him. Yeah, so then we go back over to the other house with Trent and Tina and Susan. I have to keep saying these names or I'm going to forget them. And Tina is, I don't know, being mean to her brother, because that's what she's always doing.
So Susan's a caterer, and she's like, hey, I'm with the Sims Toy Company.
Right.
And if I get in good with them, maybe they'll give you an internship. Vague toy internship.
Tina wants nothing to do with it, because fuck toys. She's a business lady.
Barf.
Right.
I believe were her words.
But Trent doesn't want it either, because he is worried that he's not going to put in enough toy imagination.
Yeah, Trent doesn't want anything. He just wants to fix a fence and sit.
He just wants to go on vague walks. But while Tina is sitting on the couch, the cat talks to her. It tells her to look at her beeping machine.
And according to the rules, Duffy can only talk to each human once. Why? Because it's the rules.
It's the rules, and he's going to say it every time.
So you don't forget.
And it's gonna,
right.
And it's going to piss me off every time.
And Tina probably is the most shocked to talk to the cat. Everyone else is like, there's like 1 second of what? And then they're in it.
She watches this cat talk to her with, you know, a mouth moving effect that's like stretching and shrinking a black oval on a Microsoft Paint file. And she's like, well, obviously, this is Trent playing a prank on me. Like, that's the only explanation. Trent's somehow, I guess, a puppeteering genius, and he's doing this to me from outside.
But he has no creativity and no imagination.
Yeah, no, right. He's a stupid turd that's going to go nowhere, but, like, this is impressive.
Kind of a neat trick. That mouth. Let's talk about that mouth moving. Because that was something out of, like, Scott Pilgrim the Game. Like an 8-bit animation just slapped onto a cat.
Yeah, it's just flapping.
It was a dark abyss. It was a scary place. There was
no
place.
Tongue.
No.
There was nothing.
No teeth.
My favorite moments were when they would do the effect, and then in the next shot when the cat wasn't talking, the cat would yawn. And you'd see the whole mouth.
You'd be able to be like, huh, that's not real.
In case you had any fucking doubt at this point, that's not real.
The cat's not actually the one that's talking. It's an invisible being that can express itself as a gaping void.
Right.
Now that's a more interesting plot.
Duffy the cat is an eldritch horror.
Yeah. But is he a horror? He does, I guess, kind of help these people. I don't know. Help is a strong word. He makes all of these people meet each other. That you can confidently say.
His help is, they'll be like, man, I don't know what to do. And then he'll just be like, do this. And they'll be like, what are you doing? And he'll be like, I'm a cat who talks. Get up and go for a walk. It's only so helpful.
Help is the word he uses a lot. But I don't know if that's exactly what happens. He tells Tina to look at her beeping machine. There's a lot of the cat talking about any electronics as beeping machines. He doesn't really like them.
He's big technology bad.
Do you think that's just Eric Roberts' opinion on technology that he just threw in there?
That wasn't a scripted line. He was just looking at the microphone and he was like, this damn beeping machine.
I think this was one pass. He didn't add any flavor. He just went off the script.
He sounds plastered.
Yes.
It's the only way to do it.
Maybe that's why it was only 15 minutes. He passed out as soon as he was done.
Yeah. So Tina goes into her bedroom. She looks at her computer, which I'm not convinced is real. I think that was just a screen. If you look at the back of that thing, I don't know.
No, it's a real computer. They taped over the logo.
Oh, is that what that was? Oh. I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
Okay, see, the tape was what made me think that it was just broken trash.
That's also a possibility, but the fact that they had two of them, later Phil's doing stuff on an identical one right next to her,
right,
made me think that, like, instead of, you know, doing, like, the standard when it's an Apple computer, they just, like, stick it over the center Apple or whatever. Instead of that, they're like, no, let's do a whole strip of duct tape just to cover our bases cover the whole logo.
The fact that they had two duplicate laptops blew my mind, because throughout the entire film, I thought they used the same one for everybody. Yeah. And then there's one shot with two laptops.
Yep.
And I screamed.
I had already complained about it and written it down.
Yep.
And then they had two. On this computer that we were talking about, this first computer, Tina sees, I guess it's like an article slash a job posting.
Yeah, it's a retirement announcement that leads into a job posting, which makes no sense. But the director or whoever, the movie, makes us read the entire page in real time.
Yeah.
And then we have to watch the actress react to reading it in real time.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
And it's not... We could have seen none of that information. She could have looked at it, and she could have allowed, said, oh, wow, an internship with Phil, last name redacted.
Of the future.
Yeah.
It would have been better, too, because English major alert here, there were some spelling errors and continuity issues within two sentences of each other. They messed up the name of the company that Phil works for. I forget what it's called.
It's Globe something, I think.
Yeah, because they messed it up. It was Globe something, and then the next line said Global, but they spelled Global, G-L-O-B-E-L. Ooh, nasty.
Yeah. He sold his company to Globe Tech, and then further down the webpage, it's Globel Tech.
Globel Tech, so fancy. French.
Yeah, I kind of like that one better. Speaking of misspellings, the closed captions are full of them.
Yeah. I had them on by accident for this movie, and damn.
Yeah, man. You got, like, we're going through the woods, and it spells through, like, the action of tossing a ball. Although with two L's, or a lot with two L's as one word. Like, it's ridiculous.
Apostrophes galore.
A lot of comma ellipses.
It hurt me. It really did hurt me as I watched it, because I only put the closed captions on for one line later in the film, because I couldn't tell what Trent said when he was in the pool and he read a text message from his mom.
And oh, yeah.
Then for the rest of the film, it was painful. I cried. I pulled out some cookie dough and a little bit of milk and just cried into it.
It was like... It's like you were witnessing a breakup with the English language.
Yeah. So back over at Casa de Phil. Phil sits down on the couch and the cat is there and makes some noises. Just like regular, like, cat noises. And Phil is like, that's so random.
Yeah.
Catch that? That was the weirdest fucking line in the whole movie, I swear.
He says that a few times.
Yeah.
He was like a 13-year-old girl on MySpace. I'm so random.
Yeah.
XD.
Oh, LOL. There's a scene of feeding the cat. And the whole time, even when the cat is not talking to the people, the cat will not stop talking.
Yeah,
it's just so that they can't hear it. So the cat is sitting there talking about, like, oh man, could you go get me a ham sandwich?
There's a lot of cat thinking moments, and like they add the little echo effect to it. But whenever the cat eats, he thinks, I'm num 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 num, I'm num num.
And that's where, like, I was driving.
I don't know about y'all, but When I eat, I don't think in chewing noises.
Yeah. He feeds the cat a little bowl of milk with, like, a knife full of peanut butter on the side.
Is that what it was? I couldn't tell. It was just like, it was like brown poop just floating in the middle of that bowl of milk.
The cat, for the entirety of the scene, is going, nom, 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 nom,
it was nom, the most nom, captivating nom, part of his performance, I found.
It was the most cat-like.
So after that, later in the day, Phil is in bed, and the cat is up there with him, hanging out.
They're watching a Humphrey Bogart marathon.
Yeah.
Which is important, apparently.
Right. He's watching a Humphrey Bogart marathon. Also, a Humphrey Bogart marathon has been mentioned by Susan already. You're gonna want to remember that, because that's important for later. Humphrey Bogart, some of his movies are in the public domain, I'd imagine.
I guess. I don't know.
Couldn't tell you.
But, like, they don't say any of them by name. They just say vague genres, and they're like, oh, man, don't you love adventure?
That's a thing I had later when they start talking about it. But first, while he's talking, the cat tells him to go for a walk. And Phil is like, oh, we're a talking cat. And he goes to get Chris, and of course, there's the one-time talking rule, so he can't talk in front of Chris.
And the cat says, I don't make the rules, Phil, to which I shouted at my TV, who does?
Who the fuck does? Yeah. So the next day, Phil goes on a walk, and he ends up at Susan's house.
The shirt Phil wears on his walk says, un pinche dia a la vez, which translates to one damn day at a time.
Okay, I didn't know pinche. So I was like, I know a day at a time. I know that it ends in a day at a time.
It's damn.
That was part of the trying to figure out where we were or what we were going for here, was like, it's all these vague beach scenes, and then his shirt is in Spanish.
The score, when Phil goes on his walk, eventually turns into La Cucaracha.
I didn't catch La Cucaracha until the credits.
Yes.
Few times.
Yes, it does.
Fantastic.
Definitely a choice.
Yeah. Well, it must have been free. So one Cucaracha later, he ends up at Susan's house, and they're chopping it up. They both like Humphrey Bogart. They both like that there's different categories of movies he's been in, but nothing specific.
Nope.
We like the action ones, and oh, there's some crime ones, and somebody likes the romance ones, and those ones sneak up on you. Which to me felt like nobody watched any Humphrey Bogart movies for this film. It was just a random name out of a hat they pick.
I think they picked it because John Whittaker's impersonation of Humphrey Bogart was spot on.
Yeah, they're like, what impressions can you do? And they're like, ah, shit, he's alive. He'd get mad at us for using his name in this movie. So is he. Ah, Humphrey Bogart. Perfect.
That's true. John does a little Humphrey Bogart when he's laying in bed watching the movies.
And in this scene, we also get a brief glimpse at John's superpowers, where Susan hands him a cup of water that's only filled up a quarter of the way. And when he grabs it, it is full.
That's just his sweat. It just poured into the glass.
That's good.
He's very
one of my
sweaty.
Favorite shots of the film is it's a close-up of him, and then this one drip of sweat just goes down his face. It's so dramatic.
It's wacky. And now that he's done this once, he starts walking over to see Susan every day. Meanwhile, at some point while this has happened, Trent has a conversation with the cat, and the cat lets him know that he's got a magic collar. It's in the woods under a big green wall. They don't talk about it for a while.
Or apparently it's on a stump, because Mike saw it.
Right.
Yeah, it's right at the beginning of the film. Right next to a tree with some Christmas lights on it.
And there was a tree with Christmas lights on it? I didn't see that either.
It's very odd. It's supposed to be in the middle of the woods, just hidden, and it's very close to civilization. There's like a little woodshed in the background.
That's California for it.
It's probably, this is all someone's property.
Oh, yeah, surely. Yeah. Surely.
All of those shots. So now we go back to the house. Who's the cat talked to? The cat has talked to Trent. The cat has talked to Tina. It's talked to Phil. We get another scene of Chris and
Franny.
And they're by the pool. And Franny might actually be able to read. She knows some of the stuff that's going on. But she just really wants to swim in this awesome pool that he has that he never wants to swim in.
Yeah, and Franny is in, like, honors and AP classes. She's smart. She's just, like, trying to take advantage of him. But, I don't know.
Is she trying to take advantage of him? Or is she trying to take advantage
of his pool? Take advantage of his pool, is what I meant. And, although, I don't know, she does say Hamlet is the story of a guy who can't take action even if the obvious is staring him in the face.
I mean,
I don't know about that.
That made me stop. I paused the film at that moment because I had to process that sentence.
I don't think it's inaccurate.
From a certain point of view, maybe.
Especially if you're looking at Hamlet through the lens of, what can I extract from this piece?
To flirt?
That's gonna help me fuck.
He takes a lot of action in the face of the obvious.
But also, he doesn't take any action in the face of the obvious.
No, he does.
I don't think that it's 100%. It's not the synopsis I would give, but I think that through a lens, you can look at it that way.
I think if you some,
but why is she picking Hamlet? Why, I think, like, why is that the quote?
They were clearly on some kind of Shakespeare unit, because later she's
okay. Well, if we're on
about
a Shakespeare unit,
she's talking about Scottish play too.
Well, that's fantastic. But if I'm looking to fuck, then I'm gonna pull from the sonnets. Right. Yeah, there's a lot of dirty shit in there.
But also, if she's still trying to do this guise of like, I can't read. I don't know what I'm doing.
If someone handed in that essay to me with the thesis of this is a play about, like, what is the line? The story of a guy who can't take action even if the obvious is staring him in the face. Reading that thesis, I would give it an automatic D and then, like, wait to see if they can back it up. She does not back it up at all. Chris just goes, well, I can't swim, okay, and leaves. Like, it's... I understand.
I think
it's
she
the
was hoping
thing.
That he would say something else. That he would say going, something
no.
about it. Right.
And I think she's okay with that grade because she's looking for
right.
the D.
There you go.
I think there's a chance that maybe it's not an overarching unit. It's like a we're doing. Because in the beginning, they get a list of books that they have to cover. And she talks about Hamlet and she talks about Scottish play. And so I think that there's a chance that only those two were on the list, maybe? Even then, Scottish play is a better use of that same quote.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Kind of. Not really.
And there's some genuinely sexy things in the Scottish play. So,
welcome to there's no that. Shakespeare option.
I mean, that's probably going to come up eventually. Someone's going to give us a Shakespeare movie.
Yeah, that's fair.
We're going to get Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet or something.
I hope it's the Much Ado with
Denzel Washington?
Nope.
Nathan Fillion?
Yes. Anyway, back to this one. Back to this masterpiece of American cinema.
How about the shots where they're trying to pretend it's not broad daylight out? So they just slap a blue filter on it.
Yeah.
And I start crying.
That was that was the very next scene was we were trying to get a phone call. I just feel like it's crazy to make that choice because there's only one of those scenes where they're outside. There's only one where they're looking up at the sky and it's nighttime here and everyone's inside the house. Why do you need to make it all blue?
Style.
I guess, man. But then it's not consistent because when Phil talks to the cat, it's nighttime in his house too, and there's no blue filter on him.
Oh, I thought he watched that when he woke up first thing in the morning.
Oh yeah, you didn't think it was night? I thought it was nighttime.
I don't know, man.
I thought it was night too, but then you're right, he does run past a window that is clearly daytime. As he's shouting, Chris!
Damn.
Chris!
Yeah, Chris! He loses his son in his own house way too much.
It's a big house. when you're out at the pool and you can look up at the top of the second floor of the house, I counted 3 or 4 windows coming out wide. It's a beefy house. That's why they shot Ass Blaster 17 there.
Now that's one I'd watch.
Jules Jordan presents Ass Worship 13.
This is my favorite game. Make sure that Connor has to say it as many times as
possible. That's
going to
be the title. A Talking Cat, : Jules Jordan presents Ass Worship 13.
It should be.
My parents listen to the podcast. They'll be like, what the hell is this?
Amazing. So we're getting close to the climax of the film here, much like in...
Are we? Are we,
yeah,
really?
I'm still a page away.
Yeah, I mean... It starts to flow downhill after a minute. Because now we're at the part, the cat talks to Chris about... The cat gives him some advice that he does not follow. That, like, he needs to talk to his dad about the fact that he can't swim and he needs to get over it. And then we move on to Phil going for another walk and bumping into the family with Susan and the kids. Susan, as we mentioned before, is a caterer, and she has a big client who's coming in for a meeting, and the client loves cheese puffs. So they got to make sure they have enough cheese puffs to get the job done, to get them to sign the thing. And Tina has to help her make the cheese puffs. So Phil shows up here, and they have made a tray of these cheese puffs. And Phil is just here to say hi and stuff. And then Susan pulls the tray of the cheese puffs out of the oven, barehanded. She's holding it for probably a full minute, just in her hands. And I'm thinking, okay, well, I guess it's just they're doing a... It's not hot. The pan's not hot. And then she hands the pan to Phil, and Phil throws it on the ground because it's so hot in his dirty paws.
Yep.
He's got baby skin. It's baby skin.
He's got baby skin, and he sees Duffy, and he's like, whoa, that's my cat.
Right. But is it that Susan just is, like, so used to it? She's like a blacksmith of food. She can just hold the hot pan.
Or... bad movie.
Also bad movie.
No think.
It's a bad movie because a little bit earlier in the scene, when they are making the cheese puffs, cheesy puffs, puff pastries, whatever they are, red lobster, cheddar bay biscuit puffs, I don't know. She uses a mitten, an oven mitt, to pull it out of the oven, and then she puts it back in a different pan. So she does know that it is hot. But within a matter of 5 minutes, she grows lizard scales on her hands.
I thought she was just going to put it down.
And can withstand
and
the heat.
I would be like, okay, whatever. I don't have to say anything. But she's holding it.
Right. I mean, there are certain containers that if you put in the oven, they're not going to get too hot if you touch areas where the food is not, which she started with. But then she put her hands underneath. And those are hot.
Yeah.
Cheese. That's hot cheese.
I don't know.
No one could withstand that heat. That is magma.
It is.
Nacho cheese at that point.
Also, it didn't seem like Phil tossed it up in the air and flipped it over upside down so all the stuff would fall out. He just dropped it.
Still messes it up enough so that they have to make more,
right,
and Susan's mad.
Yeah.
It was covered in aluminum foil. It had a top on. There was no way it could be that messed up.
But it did.
But it did. It apparently, off camera, enough of it fell out that fucking all the cheese puffs are all over the ground.
Like, if they would have made one switch and made it deviled eggs instead of these cheesy puffs, no matter how you drop deviled eggs,
you're boned.
You mess them up. Mm-hmm. It's disaster. There's no oven. Don't have to worry about that. Just a little bit of boiling water. But we've seen that she can handle it, so...
Alternatively,
come on.
They could have cooked the cheesy poos on a sheet pan.
Which they did. They did earlier in the film. Did you watch the movie? Did you watch this?
But in this instance, they also could have cooked them on a sheet pan.
Well, they did. She cooked it on a sheet pan, used tongs, and put it in this aluminum sort of bin. It was it's the weirdest cooking and baking I've ever seen.
Thing out of the later, the container that's holding.
Am I messing up the scenes? Are the scenes running together in my mind?
No matter what happened, cuffs fell on the ground.
She puts.
A lot of attention to that.
It's like an 8x13 pan with size.
And she cooks them on the sheet pan and then puts them on the warming pan and puts the warming pan back in the oven to keep them warm and probably melt the cheese some.
Right. So why not just have them on the sheet pan the whole time?
Because you need plot to happen.
Right, but if they were just on the sheet pan, then she has the sheet pan, and any way that you drop a sheet pan, pretty much, if it's at any type of angle, all the shit is going to fall off. Whereas if it's a pan with sides, all the stuff is going to stay inside. Especially just a table height straw. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk about baking. Anyway, the cheesy poofs are all over the ground. And now she's got to make more of them, because the only way she's going to close this deal is if she's got cheese puffs.
And Sims loves puffs.
Yeah. The kids, the kid, Tina, is going to cook some more. But then she hears the mom say that, she hears Susan say that Phil's name. And she goes, wait a minute, you're Phil Smendrick from the Smendrickson and Sons. What's the company's name? Anybody?
Globetech.
Globeltech.
Yeah, Globeltech. What is the... I don't know if Phil has a... Phil doesn't have a last name in the credits. Okay.
And she realizes who he is, and she tries to, like, tell him about her business ideas. And Phil is being awkward, man. He's trying to help out. He knows that he's just dropped all the stuff. So he says, Why don't you... I have two ovens at my house. I'm pretty sure I've been burning waffles there earlier. So why don't you guys come over and you cook cheese puffs at my house and it'll be fine. And then we'll cook a bunch of them. And Susan is frustrated. She says, no, also you can't, you're a man that I don't really know. This is my teenage daughter. She can't come just cook at your house.
Makes sense.
Right. No matter if you're well-intentioned or not, this is my 17-year-old daughter. You are a man I met in the woods.
And I've heard they filmed some salacious films at your house, sir.
Do you know any titles?
To be fair, the mother...
Ooh. Something like Jules Jordan Presents Ash Worship 13.
Now, the mother, the woman who plays the mother, she's also been in some smutty films in her time.
Oh, yeah.
Just to tie it back to the ass smashers.
Jules Jordan Presents Ass Worship 13.
She was in Alice in Wonderland in 1976, an erotic musical comedy.
Interesting.
Where there was a lot of fellatio and other events.
Oh, she was in Meatballs.
Yes, that as well.
Meatballs.
I mean, that's like a real movie. That's like a Bill Murray movie, but it's a little...
Johnny Whitaker was also in Meatballs.
Oh, so they're just buddies.
They're meatball buddies.
A couple of meatball pals. So Susan tells her daughter that she can't go to this guy's house to cook the cheese puffs. And Phil should get out of here. So Phil starts to go back to his house. And Tina's like, wait, I have to tell you about my app idea. And he's like, but what about your mother? She's like, no, it's fine. She said it's okay. Phil's like, yeah, okay, I guess. So they go back to the house, and they start cooking the cheese puffs, and Tina tells him about how she invented the social media algorithm, and Phil is excited about it and profiting off of it.
Well, it's an algorithm for scanning your clothes, and then it tells you what would be a good complimentary outfit.
Man, and it tells you something they didn't do anything with. It was kind of throwaway part of it was that it also tells you stuff you could buy.
Yeah,
that would be good with it.
And like, it's pretty magical because you can scan all of your clothes in with a book light.
It is a book light that they use.
That was a book light.
And there seems to be a slight discrepancy about how to scan them in, because sometimes Chris was scanning them in using the tags on the back, and Phil, quite often, was just, you know, wiping the book light all over.
Shining it on the pocket. I mean, it might have been different in 2013, but one of those, like, handheld barcode guns costs, like, $30 on Amazon.
Yeah.
Like, it's probably a doable prop.
But instead they went this
way. Well, they already spent so much.
Yeah.
Spent so much.
I would love to see a breakdown.
It's like that tweet where it's like, please help me budget, my children are dying. What is... No, wait, what is that?
What are you talking about?
Oh, it's a great tweet. It's a tweet that says, food $200, data $150, rent $800, candles $3,600, utility $150, someone who is good at the economy, please help me budget this, my family is dying. So, like, that's probably... it was by @drill. That's probably this budget breakdown.
We're somewhere in the ballpark of that. So while this is happening, Susan doesn't know where her daughter went. She sends Rockhead Trent to go find her. And Trent is excited because his sister's going to get in trouble. So Trent shows up at the house. And he sees a pool and he is immediately distracted. Trent loves pool.
Trent loves pool.
He does. And he asks Chris, who is busy... trying to get in the water. Trying desperately to swim.
Yeah, he's a little hydrophobic, that kid.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of sharks. Pool sharks!
Would have been cool to just have, like, a one shot of, like, a guy in a fedora standing on the other side of the pool. Just like a cue. Just hitting the water. It's a different kind of movie, I know, but...
No, yeah, that
fucking pool sharks over here.
That would have been interesting.
But it's a talking cat, you know? Why couldn't it be there?
Because you just answer your own question, because it's a talking cat.
And that would have been a talking man.
A talking pool shark.
The pool shark could have been the person who wanted to maybe buy the catering company.
The Sims?
Yeah, The Sims.
That threw me off every time it was mentioned. Whenever she said she was catering for The Sims, my mind immediately went to the video game. It's all I could think of.
So anyway, Trent loves pools. Trent loves swimming. Trent has become a lifeguard just so he can go in pool. She's like, hey, Chris, can I go in your pool? And Chris tells him he can.
And this is when, you know, the homoerotic starts blossoming.
It might be my favorite shot in the entire film. Because Chris has his back to Trent, and Trent just rips off his shirt, and then Chris turns back just in time as Trent dives sexily into the pool. And it feels like a setup. It feels like things are going to get real crazy.
I thought it was going to twist really fast, and I was like, is this why they gave us this movie? Like, what's going on? I mean...
It really felt like a shot at a bare-ass 67. Right, Connor?
I don't know. I've never seen that one. But, I mean, it makes sense it would have that type of vibe, considering this house does have... It's just 2 years out from Jules Jordan Presents Ass Worship 13.
There it is. So, Trent has abandoned his mission of coming to get his sister. He's swimming around. Chris is there. They've come to an agreement about how he's going to teach him to swim. And... Susan shows up now. There's also a lot of talk. The cat hasn't talked to Susan. The cat has talked to everybody but Susan, and he keeps saying it like that's going to happen. He's going to solve things by talking to Susan.
Never happens.
I feel bad for Susan. I feel bad for her.
Just needed some talking cat.
Well, how would you feel if every single one of your friends was talked to by a cat, and you were the one that did not get that pussy talk? Come on. You'd not feel pretty bad. Yeah.
I wouldn't feel good.
No, I'd be sad. Well, that's the thing. What's the rule about talking to someone once? What if it's in a group? Does that screw it up? But if he's directly addressing Susan and they just happen to be there and he's like, Susan, I'm not going to talk to them, only to you. listen to me. And they're like, oh shit, he's talking, but not to me.
It felt like something got cut. The amount of times that he said he had to talk to Susan and then nothing happened.
Yeah, just ignore Susan.
Yeah. So the aforementioned Susan arrives at the house and her son is out swimming in the pool and Tina is here and she told her not to be here and Phil is bumbling around. Phil is kind of just like in the wrecking path. He didn't really knowingly do anything here. But we have to have some tension. We have to have this all happen. So the family is fighting. Susan has lost the deal with the Sims. And Phil thinks he's going to fix it by asking her out. And it doesn't work. That was funny. The cat going, come on, Phil. You know, you got this.
And oh, no, like, he don't.
Yeah.
Stop rambling, Dad.
Right. And so Susan leaves with the kids. Susan tells Phil to take his walks somewhere else. And the cat is kind of bummed out because he was supposed to help everyone. But really, he just fucked everything up. So he goes on a walk. He's like, I'm gonna solve this. I haven't talked to Susan yet. I'm going to go down there and solve everything. And he gets hit by a car.
They do set up the fast car almost hitting Phil. It goes too fast down that road. And then it just hits Duffy.
Yeah. And Phil and Chris don't know that the cat is hit because the cat is hit at a different house until Franny is back over and Chris is finally in the pool and they're finally kind of jiving. They get some lemonade from Chris's dad. And then Franny gets a call from her friend, who is Tina. And she finds out that a cat has been hit by a car. And it's a cat. Chris is trying to find out, like, what went wrong. And she tells her, you know, that cat that you had over here, it got hit by a car. And Chris is surprised, because up until this point, Chris doesn't know that the cat has been living in two different places. I guess everyone else does at this point, except Chris.
Yeah, he's kind of out of the loop. He was too busy, you know, peeing in the side of the pool because he was so scared to be in the water.
So Chris and Phil head down to the house to see the cat. It's not looking good.
The vet has made him comfortable, a.k.a. loosely draped a piece of gauze over his head.
It's just like... It's like 8 inches of Ace bandage just lazily slapped on top of the cat's
I had head. To pause the movie. I was laughing so hard at that little image. He just had a little bit of gauze.
Oh, man. And then they have some noise from the guy playing the cat. Just going,
ow. Oh.
That's where the blowjob came in. He was just getting pleasured. And the was just from that. I'm convinced. Everything from this conversation has pointed me to that conclusion, that there was something funny going on.
Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh no, what are we going to do? This fucking cat is going to die. And then Trent's like, wait a minute, he has a magic collar in the woods. And so they all go to find the magic collar, and now Susan finds out that everyone has been talking to the cat.
Credit where credit's due. Set up and pay off. They do it.
They do. They do check that box. For most things. At least the main plot.
A single point for you, a talking cat.
Yeah. So they go out into the woods, and they find this collar that looks like a hairball.
Disgusting.
It's a disgusting collar.
Yep.
They put it on the cat, who still has the Ace bandage on his head. And... another fucking movie maker filter goes over the screen. This time it's rainbow colors.
Light show happens and everyone's kind of just staring in anticipation.
And it saves him. He gets, it's one of his 9 lives.
I guess.
Yeah.
Is that
everybody
what that
lives?
That orb was supposed to be a life of his?
I think.
Does he say that?
He says that, but he clearly says, I guess, afterwards. Like, the magic light thing happens and he's like, I don't fucking know, but I'm still here.
Right.
I just like that the first line after the orb has left his feline body is, I'm Duffy, a talking cat. Okay.
Yeah.
Why? Yeah.
And he says it, weird too, like,
I'm the Duffy, emphasis is on the talking cat.
Yeah, I'm Duffy, a talking cat.
Well, they had him record it. It was supposed to be the tagline in the trailer, and then they didn't use it. And they're like, oh, where can we put this? Oh, when he comes back to life. Of course.
That way the audience knows he's still him, and he didn't inherit another soul from the netherworld or something.
He's still that talking cat.
Because I thought, surely, that he lost all of his abilities when the orb left his body. I thought it was the magic orb.
I thought that was going to be it, too. And we would hear his thought be like, and I never got to talk to Susan, but yeah. I meow at her.
I also really liked the exchange between Franny and Chris while they're looking for the collar. Where they're running through the woods area. And she's like, what's going on here? And Chris is like, Duffy, he's special. And Franny's like, so are you. And they don't do anything with it.
No one knows.
Very Hey Arnold.
It's very romantic. Yeah. Because in the epilogue, I guess we'd call it, they have a nice little pool session that lasts way too long. Right. And she says, cannonballs. But then there's no cannonballs.
Yeah. I thought Franny said it, but whoever says it while they're already in the water, and yes. They just state as a statement, not like shouting it out like, woo, it's just like, ha, cannonballs.
And then it's a full minute of them just sort of swimming around together.
Everybody's splashing living about. Happily ever after, but the cat way.
Yeah, and he's
That's
like,
that's what he says in the voiceover.
And he's like, I did that.
Yeah. Everybody, you live a little slower and you take lots of naps. Okay, well, maybe that's just me. I take lots of naps.
Phil and Susan are together and we're played off into the credits with La Cucaracha.
La Cucaracha, which turns into...
Yeah, did you leave the credits playing to hear the
to hear Itsy Bitsy Spider?
The Calypso song that just sounds like a vague MIDI Calypso song, and then it just starts randomly throwing in lyrics to Itsy Bitsy Spider.
Oh, yeah.
The second that came up, I texted Luke. I'm like, leave the credits running on this. You have to hear this song.
I was captivated.
And I don't know if I would have kept them on if you hadn't texted me.
I just had them on because, like, I was writing the criteria, and I expected Amazon Prime to be like, all right, we're going to start playing something next. But nope. I had to hear every second, and I loved it.
Every beautiful second.
Well, I wanted to see, at the end of the credits, because they usually tell you what the songs are, the song titles, and they give credit to it. This one does not have it, but I was searching for it, and that's where I came across all those songs in the credits, and I couldn't believe that they actually had a song with lyrics, that somebody sang something. I just really couldn't believe that they would throw that in so late in the game.
And it was the Itsy Bitsy Spider.
And this is actually a good segue into the thing that we do every episode, which is we compare this movie to The Pacifier using our list of criteria. And our first one, if you've listened to any of this before, you know that the first box to tick on that is the soundtrack. How do you guys think it compared?
I mean, compared to, you know, actually licensed songs like The Anthem or Average Ordinary Everyday Superhero, doesn't hit as hard, but I don't know, that talking cat theme that played every time he talked, it got me good.
It fit the movie really well. It's none of it is, like, good, you know, I'm not really... tapping my toes. I wouldn't listen to any of this another time, but it fit what happened here.
Yeah.
And I will say there was some thought put into it because there are moments, deliberate or not, where the music sort of fit in around the dialogue. Especially during the sequence when they were scanning in the clothing, the music would go bump, 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 and then Phil would say a line, And then the music would start up again. Scanned, got it. Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. Scanned, got it. Ba-da-ba-da-da-da. And I'm like, okay, somebody actually scored this a bit. So that's some points for me.
Yeah.
I just looked it up. It is not on Spotify, unfortunately.
The Itsy Bitsy Spider?
Just a talking cat in general.
Oh.
I mean, there's podcast episodes about it, but...
There's a... On Amazon Prime, there's the movie, and there's a Laugh Tracks version of the movie.
Riff Tracks, that's yeah. They're the Mystery Science Theater 3000 guys. But they did they did a riff on this, because, you know, it's and a so bad, like, it's a good movie.
It's like a commentary that goes the whole time?
Yeah.
Kind of thing? That's what I figured. Yeah. Alright. And next up, we have... Where does this movie land on the Dieselometer? Which is a running scale of all Vin Diesel performances, both on screen and off. It's charm, it's likability, it's Vin Diesel-iness. What do you got?
The main act, it all depends on who you say the main actor for this is. I chose Eric Roberts as Duffy. I would say it's kind of like Vin Diesel's performance of Drunken Love. It's strange and awkward, and you laugh at it, but it's like, why did they sign on to this? Why did they do this? It feels like it was done in 15 minutes in a living room.
Fair enough.
It's not bad, but it's like, what's going on?
I said it's his character in Saving Private Ryan, because he's not there very long. Every time you watch that movie, you think he's going to be around longer than he is. It's short-lived, and it's like, I would say, his most, like, Johnny regular guy performance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the cat gives us here, is, hey, I'm just a guy, I'm just a fucking cat.
This is a tough one, because in my mind, there are a couple of different options, because there's part of me that thinks that it kind of ranks on the scale of just Vin Diesel at home, putting no effort into anything, especially if we're talking about Eric Roberts. But then I also get a little bit of, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy Groot, because it's just one line with a couple of different pieces there.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's, it reminded me a lot of what Eric Roberts was doing. It was a lot of the same line spoken in subtly different ways, and that's where I would land, somewhere between Vin Diesel sitting at home on the toilet, kind of, and Guardians of the Galaxy. Quite a range, I think.
All right,
that fits though.
Yeah, that works. Next up, did you like it as a kid? Would you have liked it?
I get bored.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I feel like kid me would get restless during a lot of this.
I think I would have liked it.
No. Why? No, objectively, no. Like, there's no slapstick comedy. I mean, the closest we get to it is the vroom vroom beep beep moment early on. And that's not even slapstick. That's not even slapstick. That's just funny noises you make with your mouth.
Yeah. I also definitely had a thing when I was a kid where I hated live action talking animal movies. And I found out later it was because of CGI in the Uncanny Valley, like the old Dr. Doolittles, where like the mouths would move, but it wouldn't look quite right. I'd be like, something scary about that, and my brain couldn't translate to the CGI is bad and I don't like it. So like, I mean, but this, like, this isn't enough where it would freak me out. Yeah,
that's just a real cat.
Yeah, like Mike said, it would just be like, nothing's happening. They're kind of just sitting around talking to each other.
Yeah, like, I don't care about Susan's toes and how she can't find her shoes. That, as a plot point, as a child, that means nothing to me. I don't care that her kid wants to go to business school, but Susan says, you're too smart to go to school. That's not teaching me anything good.
Yeah. Why is I thought movies were supposed to teach us to be nice to our siblings. Why did these brother and sister want to murder each other?
Right. I don't know. I think I felt the opposite way that you did about talking animal movies. So I think I probably would have just been in Talking Cat. I don't think that I would have, like, loved it. It wouldn't have been my favorite thing. But I think I definitely could have watched it and enjoyed it.
You want to ask your parents, can we have a talking cat themed birthday party this year?
Yeah. What has the director of this masterpiece gone on to do?
So in the credits, it's attributed to, what's her name? Mary Crawford.
Yes.
When looking up Mary Crawford, the woman does not exist. It's like Pepe Sylvia. It's a pseudonym for David Ducoteau, who's a Canadian U.S. director. He just does a bunch of schlock stuff. Stuff like Puppet Master 3 or A Husband for Christmas.
What's schlock?
Schlock. Like, you know, schlocky garbage. Camp. Like, stuff like this. Okay. You know, something called 2 Voodoo Academy. But as Mary Crawford, he has directed The Great Halloween Puppy Adventure, Santa's Summer House, and then the other two movies in the exclamation point, question mark, exclamation point series, I guess, A Talking Pony and My Stepbrother is a Vampire. Also, an Easter Bunny Puppy.
I watched the trailer for the pony one. The pony one uses the same house, and the only repeat actor is Susan, I think.
I think Phil is the voice of the horse in that one.
Of Horatio the horse, yes.
Yeah. But yeah, according to IMDb, David Ducoteau has 168 directing credits from the 80s until now.
No, and now that's difficult, though, because he uses more than one pseudonym. He's not just Mary Crawford. He's also Ellen Cabot, Victoria Sloan, Julian Breen, Richard Chasen, wow. Martin Tate, Joseph Tennant, Jack Reed.
That's fascinating.
And there's no reason. I could not find a reason for him doing it. Because he freely admits that he made a talking cat. He talks about it in quite a few interviews. He's proud of it.
Yeah,
he thinks it's hilarious.
He went on a podcast to like talk about it.
But he never talks about why he picks these names.
Man. If you're listening to this out there, Mary, David, Richard, whatever you're going by these days, and you want to give us a shout, you don't like what we said, you want to say some stuff back, let us know. We'll put you on the air.
It is Dave. He's everything looks like it's under David Ducoteau for now. Like the wrong fiance, the wrong Mr. Right, the wrong real estate agent, all set to be released or already released in 2021.
Hey man, you never know. You never know what happens. I was listening to this other show called, shout out to them, The Sandler Pit, and they do the Adam Sandler movies. They rewatch them and they decide whether something belongs in the Sandler Pit or the Sandler Castle. And they did an episode on Click, and the director of the movie, I think it was on Twitter, had like a lot to say back to them. So much that like when they were recording their next episode, they had to record a blurb in front of it that was like, hey man, you know.
How you doing?
Yeah. So you never know, this guy could reach out. Was the point of that long-winded story. But back on the criteria side of things, our next one is there anything as memorable as the Peter Panda dance in this movie?
Either Phil's whole look or the talking cat effects. I was stuck in between the two.
What about you, Mike?
For me, it might be Franny's look. Franny's look with the bow tie is probably the most memorable thing that will stand out to me. I'll tell you why. A quick little tangent on why. Because there's one throwaway line where they're using that app and Phil says, why don't you put on this pink or a pink or purple tie with balloon pants, is his suggestion, which already tells me the app is terrible. But then he comes out with this sort of like GQ, H&M look, and he's really handsome. But then
he does describe himself as GQ.
Exactly. And then who comes in? Franny. And she's wearing pink and purple with a tie. And I'm like, maybe he should have wore that pink and purple tie. And so I've just been thinking about it, and that's been ruminating in my mind for 2 days now.
It's been ruining my day.
And so it's memorable. It's very memorable to me.
All right. I was stuck between, I really liked the line, check your beeping machine. I don't know why, but Chris and I could not stop laughing at it. So it's between that and all of the tricks to get the cat into where they needed it to be. The laser pointer, very visible and the treats. Yeah.
There is some real deep choreography put into that. Because someone had to be right off screen doing things. And you see a lot of it in the B-roll footage in the credits. Mm-hmm. All the different stupid toys and paper that they used to get the cat to do what they wanted.
Right.
Yep.
I did like that portion of the credits. That was all.
It was just cat videos.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong with that.
You can see a video on my TikTok of the cat just watching it. The cat in the house was just sitting on the couch like glued to the TV. Watching other cat. Next up, who was the Brad Garrett or Carol Kane of the film? Memorable side character.
There are no side characters. I guess besides Franny, everyone is main cast.
Right.
And when everyone is, nobody is.
No one is. Yeah. I guess Sims, the toy guy?
The off-screen toy guy.
Yeah, he seems straight. He's a big, important investor, but he runs a toy company and is obsessed with cheese puffs. I guess I'll give it to him.
I mean, I'd make an argument that it's the very fast driver.
Okay.
That's good.
The neighbor who drives too fast.
See, I gotta give it to Trent and his dumb faces.
He should be telling me the news.
Instead of working on that fence all day, that same spot.
Yeah. All he does is work on that fence.
That's
going to
be a stripped screw.
If it's not already. Last up. Was there anything as batshit insane as the Sound of Music subplot in The Pacifier? Which, in case you don't remember, is a subplot that comes in the movie. It's about halfway through the film where the school thinks that the older boy that Vin Diesel is watching, Seth, is a Nazi because he comes into school with a bleached hair and they find a Nazi armband in his locker. So Vin Diesel steals the little girl's bike and chases him after school. And he chases him to a place that he thinks is a Nazi meeting, but it's not really a Nazi meeting. He's just playing Rolf in a community theater production of The Sound of Music with like a 40-year-old Liesel. Vin Diesel later goes on to direct that production and cast Brad Garrett as Mother Superior. Do you
Mother
think
Abby.
As batshit insane as that? What?
Mother Abby.
Isn't she Mother Superior?
Oh, I don't know. I just rewatched it recently and I heard them specifically say Mother Abby and I was like, oh, have we been wrong?
Oh.
I couldn't tell you.
I haven't
could
sounded
not tell
music
you.
In a while.
Yeah, neither have I. I don't think I
was
14
since... the last time.
I think the last time I saw it was when my sister was in it in high school. She was just one of the nuns.
Yeah.
I saw it when I was 5.
But in this movie, was there anything like that?
So initially, I wrote the music choices and the bad closed captioning, which was just throughout. But I think it has to change to the fact that the interior of Phil and Chris's home is the same set used for the 2011 pornographic movie Jules Jordan Presents Ass Worship 13.
That's a good answer. I still think nothing beats the Ace bandage. The vet went in there and he did all he could do. He made him comfortable.
Plop.
Yeah. But that's, you know, Ass Bananarama is a close second.
Ooh.
I literally just said it.
What about you, Mike?
This is another really, really tough one because... so much happens in this film, as we just found out, more than I even remember happening in the 83 minutes of the runtime. And my brain just keeps going back to the cheese puffs. And just that whole sequence. Because there is no way that I thought that chain of events was going to happen at all. That it would become such a prominent part of the film.
Right.
Yeah.
And then just to find out that Phil has two ovens at home.
That and he didn't show.
That he didn't show. And then they went there and somehow he has all the ingredients to make the cheesy puffs. That's insane to me.
Except the cheese. It was a different cheese.
It was a different cheese. But he had everything else. He had the flour, the sugar, the whatever else went into it.
Well, yeah. He was thinking about getting into cooking in his retirement.
Oh, I must have missed that line. There was so much going on. That
little plot. Pop that out real quick.
Yeah. All right. So, do you guys have a final rating for this movie?
I gave it 4 treats loosely left on set out of 7. Yeah, it's terrible, but I had a lot of fun with it. I had a good time. I feel like if I watched it with people, then I would have had more fun. But even on my own, I was laughing my ass off. It's not as good as The Pacifier, though.
Right. Yeah, I gave it 6 cheese puffs and a half a laser pointer. It's not better than The Pacifier. But I did have fun with it, and like more fun than I expected to have. It's definitely a bad movie, but it's certainly not the worst movie I've ever seen. What about you, Mike?
I would give it 4.5 Volkswagen couches. Because it felt like half a movie to me. It definitely felt like half a movie. Shoved into a full 83-minute runtime. Very much how I feel about Meredith Willson's The Music Man. It's 25 minutes of content shoved into 2.5 hours. We could make it really short. It could have been a short film. I mean, it could have even been 13 minutes shorter, because all you need to have for a feature film is 70 minutes of content. We didn't need that extra 2 minutes of Susan driving.
Oh, that was...
So we're going to cut it in half. I'm cutting the car in half. Completely.
All right. We'll take it. And that's that, said the cat. That's a talking cat. And next up, we have Mike has picked what our next movie is going to be. It's time to play, and he's going to make us guess. It's time to play the Coming Attractions game.
Exactly. I've never played this game, so what do I do?
Mike, you're going to give us some hints, and we're going to try to figure out what the next movie we're going to be watching for the show is.
Okay. Well, I'll start off with, it is an action film, and there is some crazy hair in it. Some meme-worthy hair.
Oh, no. That's not an action movie.
All right.
Do you have
Let's more? Have another one.
You want a little bit more? You want a little bit more?
Yeah.
There is an airplane in it.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I'm making this hard. I want it to be a little bit hard on you guys.
When it comes to the airplane, is the movie itself... Would you say the movie is pro-air? Or is it something else?
Ah, I see what you did there.
I would say it was almost exactly the opposite of a pro-air experience.
would you say this movie is caged?
Paged?
Caged, I think he said.
Oh, caged. Is it caged? It definitely is, seeing as it is a prison plane.
So we're going to have to put the bunny back in the box next week and watch Con Air?
You're going to have to.
Oh, boy. Yes.
Bust out your Steve Buscemi eyes.
This is one of those times where Connor and I both got it, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, this
doesn't
is
doesn't happen every week.
Welcome, change of pace.
Bingo cards.
Hey, I mean, you got it on the 3 guesses of planes, meme-worthy hair. Good job. I'm impressed.
You said meme-worthy hair, and my mind immediately went, Oh, isn't the meme Phil Spector with that huge hair in the courtroom? But then I was like, that don't make sense. That's bad. All right, cool. So
yeah,
tune in next week where Luke and I and a special guest will be talking Con Air. Con Air is now, at least at the point of recording this, streaming on Hulu.
Right on. So you guys can watch along with us.
Yep.
Thanks for coming on, Mike. Do you have anything you want to plug, you want to talk about?
Sure. Right now, I'm the co-founder of Flash Milk Productions. We create original and parody videos both on Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, Instagram. Just search for Flash Milk. There's not that many people named Flash Milk. And thank you so much for having me on. I would be remiss if I did not talk about how overjoyed I am to sit here and talk to my two friends from my college years and to hear your soothing, smooth voices again.
Yeah, we're really happy you could do it. Thanks.
We're happy to have your smooth voice here as well.
Yes.
That's just the condenser mic.
Or is it the mic condensed?
Ooh.
It's not gonna work.
I knew what you were doing. It just, yeah.
It's just laid flat.
Didn't exactly hit, but that happens.
Didn't exactly take off.
Sayonara.
Well, you can...
As for us, yeah. As for us, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at No Highway Pod, our YouTube, at No Highway Option, what's the name of that. Connor, do you want to talk about chicken?
No.
Ah, we're getting there. We're warming him up, folks.
No. It's not me.
Similar to a talking cat, when you're hungry, you get kind of like a talking stomach, you know? And we're searching for something to help that talking stomach. We're looking for, if you've been listening to us for a while, you know what we're after. We are desperately in search of the recipe to the old Yukon Gold chicken wing sauce that used to be made at the Rafters Bar and Grill in Amherst, Massachusetts. So if anyone out there can get us in touch with the old owners of that restaurant, it has since closed, but not from our hearts or talking stomachs. Connor is really, he's hurting for it. Help us out.
Never been. But if you want to give the chicken recipe, or if you want to call us and talk about anything you want, you can call our Highway Patrol tip line at 301-941-7493 or 301-941-SIZE. If you're the director of a talking cat and you want to yell at us, fine, we'll play your voicemail on the air. Maybe it'll be fun. Who knows?
Yeah.
I'd love to hear it.
If you're the talking cat himself, I hope Squeaky is still alive.
Yeah. If you guys want to come on and we'll watch the pony one with you.
Yeah, right.
Do a special bonus episode. Is that everything?
I think so. I don't know. If someone wants to give me a job, I don't know, I'll plug. If Hank Sauce wants to make me do advertisements for them, I gladly will.
I don't know what Hank Sauce is.
Equal sauce thing. It's a good hot sauce from South Jersey.
Oh, I didn't know if it was the sauce that the guy from the Try Guys makes.
No, that's
his Keith. Name's not Hank.
His is good too.
Yeah.
But no, I used some of their seasoning in a TikTok I made and it went somewhat viral. And a lot of the comments were like, wow, Hank Sauce. I'm like, yeah, do they want me to advertise for them? What do I do?
How do I reach out here?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I would like money.
Yeah. But anyway, we're just kind of rambling here. But this has been our episode on A Talking Cat. Join us next week for Con Air with another special guest. Not Connor, Con Air.
No, I'm going to be here.
Yeah, Connor will be here.
And that title does relate to something that happened in my life. But you're going to have to listen and find out.
Ooh. Right.
So anyway, these have been all of our thoughts and opinions. And if you didn't like them, that's too bad.
Who are you?
I'm Luke.
And for No Highway Option, I've been Connor.
And I'm Mike. Yeah.
And these have been our opinions.
There you go.
And if you didn't like them, that's too bad, because it's our way.
No highway option. And one last time, for posterity, I'm going to get real close to the mic for it, and I'm just going to say it as it fades out under the theme song. You don't know what it's going to be? It's going to be Jules Jordan presents Ass Worship. The theme music for No Highway Option was created by Ian C. Weber. To hear more of Ian's music and see some of his videos and stuff, follow the new link in our show description. No Highway Option was co-created and co-hosted by Connor J. Burke and Luke Smith, and produced by Connor.